the go? Take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to CFRA Live with Andrew Pinsent.
And welcome back to CFRA Live. Keep those texts coming, 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. It's simply text throughout the rest of the show. We talk about the Byward Market. Would you be interested in paying a levy to help revitalize the area? We're just talking with the mayor as well. That one of the options being floated right now, a special tax to help revitalize the area economically. There's some other issues at play, obviously, in the market, but your thoughts welcome on that at 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. I was chatting earlier on this morning about the decision this week not to hold a public inquiry into foreign election interference. That from Special Rapporteur on Election Interference, David Johnston, coming this week. And it's spawned much criticism, not just from opposition parties, but others as well. So moving forward, I guess we're stuck with this decision. A committee, David Johnston being asked by opposition parties to attend a committee to explain his decision. A lot of political noise around this, but trying to wade through some of that. Joining us to talk about that this morning is Artur Wilczynski, former Director General of Security and Intelligence at Global Affairs Canada, and also served as Assistant Deputy Minister of Intelligence at the CSC. Artur, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
When you get to the conclusion, I guess let's just start with the conclusion, no public inquiry. Do you think that's good for the country and trying to get to the bottom of interference in our elections?
I actually was surprised by Mr. Johnson's decision not to call a public inquiry. Look, I have immense respect for Mr. Johnson. He is a person of impeccable integrity who has for decades contributed immeasurably to Canadian and to Canada. I think he needs to be acknowledged for all that work. But unfortunately, I disagree with the conclusion that he drew, which is not to have a public inquiry. And the reason for that is because both as he and the Prime Minister have said, our democracy is about trust. And while it might be profoundly unfair, it might be profoundly partisan, Mr. Johnson over the past few months has been the focus of much speculation and commentary. And the effect of that speculation and commentary has been to erode the trust of many Canadians in the process that he's leading. And I think that because too many Canadians are now questioning his impartiality, again, whether or not that's fair, I think we need a different kind of process to get to the bottom of what has been happening over the past number of months and years in terms of Chinese foreign interference in Canada. But more importantly, we need an independent process to get us ready for what's coming because our adversaries, their tactics are evolving, and we need to make sure that our democratic institutions are strong and resilient so that Canadians can have confidence in them moving into the next elections.
And to your point, you know, we are seeing that reflected in the poll numbers, Canadians' concerns about this. And regardless of the conclusion here, they are still concerned about it. So when we talk about that openness and transparency and being able to trust our institutions, I guess, does it make sense when you hear the Special Rapporteur this week saying there's too much national security risk involved in terms of some of the intelligence involved to be able to do this properly? Do you think there is a way to kind of parse out classified things to be able to get a more clear aspect of what's been going on in our elections?
So I do, actually. I mean, like, I've spent a good chunk of my career working with very classified information. And there is a way, and I quite frankly, Mr. Johnson himself found a way to parse that information and put things out in the public domain that are appropriate without betraying the specificity of the reporting, without betraying any of the techniques or sources. It is possible to speak appropriately about classified information without crossing those lines. So I don't necessarily buy that. And history has actually shown, and recent history has shown, that independent inquiries into national security matters are more than possible. In fact, they're required. We saw that in terms of the governmental inquiry into the downing of Air India. We saw that in terms of the independent inquiry into Mahar Arar. Both of those instances were linked to national security issues where highly classified information was dealt with. We can do it, and we have done it. So I think it's a bit of a red herring to say, you know, ooh, this is too classified, we can't talk about it. You can't talk about certain aspects of it. And I think that if Canadians' expectations are, and if the opposition party's expectations are, that the specific intelligence reports that may have been subject to the leaks are all of a sudden going to be put out into the public, they will not. They cannot, because that would, inappropriately disclose the techniques and the sources that the government relies on that need to stay classified for a bunch of reasons, not least of which is that we don't want to show our hands in terms of our capability to our opponents who are very sophisticated.
To your point about, having some of that information, obviously, we parse through this information on a national security level on a daily basis. So does it somewhat puzzle you to say, for David Johnson to say, hey, opposition leaders, will brief you behind closed doors and let you see it, but we can't let anybody else see it? It seems unprecedented.
No, so I mean, I don't think it's unprecedented. I mean, look, people get sworn into the Privy Council, ministers, opposition leaders, when they need to be part of protected and at times classified conversations around Canadian national interest. That happens. It happens in many, many instances where opposition leaders, because the questions are so fundamental to the interests of Canada or of other countries, that they need to be brought in because you really want a broad consensus in order to respond to a particular challenge. And I think that is the case when we're talking about protecting our democratic institutions. This should be as devoid of partisanship as possible. And because if we do insert this kind of, and we have, unfortunately, insert this kind of partisan debate around our democratic institutions, we fray the consensus required in terms of our governance. And what I mean by that is that all of a sudden people are questioning our electoral system, they're questioning the fairness of the votes. And I think the broad conclusions have been that the integrity, the fundamental integrity of our elections has not been compromised. But what has worked to erode that confidence has been the debate, the partisan debate that's existed over the past number of months. That's why I really am disappointed that both Mr. Blanchet and Mr. Poiliev have refused to look at the intelligence. I think that, they can look at it and still draw broad conclusions and say, that did not satisfy me. I'm still not happy that the government has taken the appropriate action as a consequence of seeing that intelligence. What they can't say is the specific content of it. But much like Mr. Johnson drawing conclusions and putting them in his report about specific pieces of intelligence, they, I think, have the capability to do the same thing. And God knows Mr. Poiliev is very pithy in his response. He knows how to communicate effectively. I think he's got both the competence and the ability to speak to these things and criticize the government appropriately while protecting national security. If he can't do that, I think that he'll have a profound problem if he expects to be prime minister.
And speaking to kind of the partisan nature, you mentioned, institutions in general. We are living in a political era where, institutions are under attack on an almost daily basis. It is kind of a political theory at this point. Is that a reason that it is more important than ever now to be as transparent as possible, because that vacuum is just filled with disinformation?
100%. Completely agree with that. And in fact, I think that part of the cynicism and skepticism that we're seeing today in the Canadian population is precisely because as government and as government institutions, we have not been transparent. The opacity of the national security system is too much. And when there is a crisis, when we do need some reassurance that things have been managed appropriately, Canadians don't have any familiarity with either the personalities involved, the processes, how we do these things. They're just told, trust us. And that's not good enough. And it's one of the things that I've been calling for. And I think others in the national security community have increasingly been calling for, particularly those of us who are now retired from it. We're a little bit more free to express this perspective. But we need transparency. We need Canadians to understand, what the mandates are of organizations like the Communication Security Establishment, to understand what signals intelligence actually means, what CSIS does, how it does it, not in a way that betrays the things that should stay classified, but that's more candid with Canadians about the threats that they face, that's more transparent in terms of the personalities who are involved, so that when we call on them to explain things to us, we have, again, a measure of trust built in. And we're starting with, I think, a trust deficit. That's being amplified by further opacity on the part of various government institutions, and then expecting Canadians to just go, oh, yeah, that's all great. Let's go with that. I don't think that's good enough. Canadians should expect more.
No doubt. I know this isn't the last we'll be talking about this, but Archer, thank you so much for your time and your perspective on this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Archer Wilczynski is a former Director General of Security and Intelligence at Global Affairs Canada, also serving as Assistant Deputy Minister of Intelligence at the Communications Security Establishment. Fantastic analysis. Your thoughts on that? 580-580 tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Kind of going through some of the partisan spin a little bit this week on this, and that's why I always appreciate Archer's perspective on this. But kind of, you know, has a little bit to say about everybody here. But I think just the more important part about transparency, and just particularly just the point I was making about in an age where institutions are constantly under attack, they cannot afford to be secret and to make even the perception of decisions behind closed doors. I think a lot of people have concerns about foreign interference in their elections. It's been playing out in the poll numbers, as I mentioned, even post this report coming out or this recommendation coming out from David Johnston. So it is important that people kind of understand, but just kind of getting wrapped up in the partisan games, it doesn't really help us either in that aspect, right? As Archer said, and as I mentioned earlier, the opposition parties could view this, right? They could view all of the evidence that David Johnston has. They've been offered this security clearance, but they don't want to because they can draw their own conclusions and spin that in public, right? So it's just a very important part of our national security apparatus that it's one of those things that just can't afford to get partisan. And I just feel we're doing it right now, and we're also feeding into it a little bit as well. But your thoughts, 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll take a quick break here. I wanted to chat a little bit more about the Byward Market coming up at the bottom of the hour. The counselor for Rideau Vanier, Stephanie Plonk, going to join us about this proposed levy to help support the Byward Market, revitalize that. We'll talk about that coming up here. Get some texts as well. 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll be right back here.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's CFRA Live with Andrew Pinsent on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
K22, welcome back. I wanted to get to a couple of texts. Oh, first on the issue of foreign interference. Somebody, quite frankly, asking if you buy the bullcrap. I have no idea in terms of, there's a lot of smoke, but I still haven't seen, you know, a smoking gun or a fire or anything like that. But there is no doubt questions here. And it's not even on this issue, right? It's, you know, there's been issues with the Pierre Elliott Trudeau Foundation, and I know that's separate issue as well. They've been trying to tamper, you know, that down. There's been a bunch of former heads talking. So it's been political nightmare for the Liberals. But again, see a lot of smoke, but I'd like to see some fire. But I would also like to understand just on a more level of what exactly China has been doing in terms of our elections, even on a general level. Stuff to be aware of in the next election, for example, one we might be having shortly. As Archer kind of said, just in terms of, I have the utmost respect for David Johnston and have no reason to believe, because of his career, that politically he has any stake in the game in covering up something for the Trudeau Liberals. But that being said, part of the problem, as we were chatting with Archer, is still this perception, right? It's still the perception of what's wrong. And people need to know, because as mentioned, you know, naturally the void of information gets filled with rumor and disinformation. And right now, when you talk about social media, that's on steroids. So it just gets out of control quickly. Right? On both sides. One side more than the other lately, but on both sides, it does get out of control. So I don't even know what to buy yet, but I would like to see more information and would like to see, you know, proof in the pudding in terms of what's in these documents. As much as we can. Because I think Canadians do deserve an answer about their democracy. 1024 here, wanted to get to the Byward Market issue as well. A couple of texts on that. Mark in Centertown says, this third, fourth, or fifth new plant from the market, I think it's at least five. I have to check, but it's been a lot. It is more of the same. A new special plan that closes more roads to create public spaces, takes away more parking, makes it harder to drive to. This new plan is just a continuation of the ongoing plan to remove cars from the market, which is ultimately more responsible for killing it. To attract suburbanites who've abandoned the city for their home offices, you need open roads and ample parking, plus a safe environment. That's not the market. Also, why should the rest of the city pay more tickets for the market? We already support much better areas in our own vibrant, busy, and safe center town neighborhoods that are successful because they're not micromanaged by our incompetent City Hall and Sparks Street. No, I take all your points. I kind of see the idea just in terms of, I don't know about a citywide levy. Why would you not fund your own kind of BIA in that aspect, right? If you're a center town taxpayer, hey, how about the center town BIA or the Glebe BIA, for example, or the Kanata BIA? Kind of go towards that. And these 15-minute cities we're talking about to make it so we don't have to go very far. Maybe we're kind of developing kind of more of that so we don't have to go as far. And then we visit the market for just, you know, fun and giggles. But just in terms of traffic in the market, let me see here. You know, talking about getting rid of that parking garage, that was kind of dicey to me because it is getting old is what the city says. But that's a lot of parking to take away from the downtown. And the side streets are already kind of full right now with traffic during the day, just in terms of parking, right? It's a bylaw's dream. So to take away, you know, paid spots for the entire day, I think that's going to be troublesome. But the other idea, too, is that, well, the Bauer Market isn't supposed to be car-friendly, right? It is a major pedestrian hub. That's kind of the whole point of it. But you have to kind of park around it to get to it, is the other aspect of it, too. So I don't think there's any closed roads involved in this one. They do want to redesign Sussex and Rideau, pay some money to do that, to make it more welcoming, quote-unquote, whatever that means. But, yeah, I don't know if that's the answer. There's a lot of questions still, I think, remaining in terms of a levy, what this would possibly mean. That was one that stuck out to me, was that parking garage, getting rid of that. But also, you know, $250,000 to redesign an intersection. Right now, I don't know. Is that better to go into community housing or other issues, social issues in the market? I'm not sure. But your thoughts, welcome. 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Take some of those texts coming up after the news as well, up until 11 o'clock. That's when we're here until with you on News Talk 580 CFRA. Counselor for Rideau Vanier Ward also expected to join us here in the last half hour of the show. Get to that and more when we come back here after the news.
Welcome back to CFRA Live with Andrew Pinsent on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Six. Welcome back. This is CFRA Live. I'm Andrew Pinsent with you. Until 11 o'clock this morning, we've been chatting about a possible levy and other kind of options being explored to fund the revitalization of the Bauer Market. Report coming out. You can find that on CTV News Ottawa. Talking about a possible levy, a number of things that need to be done, kind of transformational change when it comes to the Bauer Market. And joining us to chat about that this morning is Stephanie Plonge. She is the counselor for Rideau Vanier. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Bonjour. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How about you? Gorgeous day out there.
It is lovely. We're actually doing a big park cleanup here in Lower Town, so I invite everyone to just get outside and enjoy the beautiful day.
Oh, that's definitely a great way to spend it. There's race weekend. There's lots happening for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are already kind of out here in the Byward Market, so we have seen a bit of a tourism bump here the last little bit. But when it comes to this revitalization piece, what kind of do you see a lot of opportunities here when it comes to changing the Byward Market? Let's start there.
Yeah, and I just wanted to sort of reconfirm what you just said about the Byward being a bump in place the last couple weeks. I was there 2 weeks ago. I couldn't even find a parking spot. I could barely walk through. It's really sort of turned a corner, it seems, on the weekends. Like, there are a lot of people going. So I just wanted to thank you for mentioning that, because I was surprised, you know, seeing all the people and families and patios. So it was a really, really nice to see. But to your question, Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the Byward market has just kind of been a microcosm for what's happening in a lot of cities across the country. It was really hardly hit by the opioid crisis very early on, by the housing crisis very early on. You know, there's also been, and I'm not shy to say it, an effort to sort of concentrate a lot of our social services in that area, which I believe was a mistake. And the result was some not so happy tourists and some not so happy vulnerable people who weren't getting the help they needed, and definitely some not so happy residents and tourists. So, you know, it's really a once in a lifetime opportunity to sort of turn the corner of the Byward market and open a new page. And let's be honest, we've learned a lot about housing over this, you know, whole pandemic. We know what works and what doesn't, and now we can apply it here in our nation's capital.
And I guess anything was on the table, as mentioned in the CTV news story about, you know, a possible levy. And still, I just want to make clear that there's nothing on the table right now. But just when it comes to funding, you know, what that levy would be used for, you're talking about community housing and things like that. Would that be part of an option here?
Absolutely. I always say, you know, all options are on the table. Now, just to clarify a bit about the levy. So anybody who has had affiliation with a BIA knows that you pay a levy towards your BIA when you are a business in a certain area. This is kind of that same idea. So there would be a levy on the local businesses contributing to the municipal corporation. Now, there have been some sort of, you know, open discussions about, you know, how can the city contribute to the larger revitalization of the Byward market? How can we make sure our historical sites are well maintained? My position is, you know, we absolutely need the feds and the province to come on board, because we do have a lot of federal historical sites there. And, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm an optimistic person by nature. So I think we'll see those things come to pass. And I'm also really curious to have this discussion with my council colleagues and people such as yourself as to what they want to see in the Byward market. You know, not everybody lives downtown. What do they want to see when they come here? I did a lot of my budget consultations with kids, and they had so many great ideas. You know, they want to see an aquarium. They want to see a concert hall. They want to see a climbing gym. You know, there's so many good opportunities we have that don't involve, you know, the run-of-the-mill parking garages or, you know, things that we normally sort of associate with the Byward market that hasn't really helped keep it spit polished, let's say.
And just to pick up on a couple of things there, it's kind of interesting because it is kind of a bunch of different aspects coming together, right? You've got the economic side and you've got the social kind of side of it as well. I guess, how intertwined are those two things to kind of revitalizing the market?
Well, it's very interesting. So I've had a lot of conversations in the last 2 days with festivals, because we have a lot of festivals coming up. Some of them are in my ward. And they do surveys, right, with people who come for different festivals. And they say everybody goes to the Byward. Every tournament, every conference, everybody, if they're here, they come to the Byward market. Now, absolutely, we need to keep it as a tourist attraction, and we need to keep it vital in that sense, because that is a lot of money in our pockets. We have 150 hotels within 1 kilometer of the Byward market. So that should tell you that it is a popular draw. But we also want to keep it for our residents. You know, I want the residents to tell me what they want to see there. You know, everybody complains that there's a lack of market in the Byward market. So that's something we definitely need to look at. And we need to bring people down there just for, you know, community enjoyment. Like I said, whether that's a shared community space, concert hall, climbing gym, something that people can come and say, I'm going to the Byward, I'm going to eat, I'm going to climb, and I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah, and I guess playing into that as well, I guess the perception of it being safe in the market, that's, we've got a few comments on that this morning as well. Yeah. And, you know, living in Lower Town and frequently coming to the Byward market every day, I feel safe. I'm only one person, though. That perception is kind of key in that aspect. So how important is that to kind of rebranding the market as well, or branding the market just in general?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's that even that feeling of safety and security that will bring people to the market. And the one thing that I keep telling people is you can't police your way out of a housing crisis. Like, you need homes in a housing crisis, right? So I do agree with the mayor that we do need some sort of, you know, community hub or police presence in the market that could include things like housing, police. I would also like to see bylaw have a foot patrol in the Byward market. You know, I don't know if you've seen, sometimes some people bring out a marching band at 9 p.m. and the residents aren't too thrilled about that. So there's lots of people that have to come together to make this happen. And, you know, my door is always open. Let's start those conversations. I'm really looking forward to the future of the Byward. I think it's going to be really, really great.
I know the pushback you get when you mention the kind of citywide levy or citywide tax always gets some reaction as well. Yep. But the idea of, if that were to come to pass, we're talking, from the sounds of it, it would be, you know, $10 to $20 on your property tax
bill. I know. Yeah. And I think, You know, we do have levees all over the city. My colleague, Marty Carr, was just telling you about the levee that they have in Alta Vista. It was for a skating rink. This isn't anything new. And you have to understand, too, like, you know, large projects to revitalize heritage buildings, like, those aren't cheap. Those aren't free. But I'm also very hopeful that the feds and the province can come on board, because they also benefit, too, when tourists come to the nation's capital. You know, they go to Parliament. They go to our historic sites. They go to our national museum. So it's not just people in Ottawa that benefit from the byword.
Yeah, very true. And just in terms of that public consultation piece, I know people would want to weigh in on that. I guess, is there a broader kind of, meeting kind of coming up or kind of addressing this? Or is this going to kind of be done piecemeal for the next little bit?
Yeah, so if there is any sort of... you know, big citywide decision to be made about the byword, like we've been doing for Lansdowne, like we've done for the library project, we would absolutely be on Engage Ottawa. There would be community consultations, there would be public consultations. I always make myself available to community associations, even the ones outside of my district, because I think it's important to sort of talk about issues like the opioid crisis and the housing crisis in a larger city context. You know, they're not just downtown issues, as we've learned. So, you know, there would be a larger engagement process. And I think it's one of those sort of big city projects that everybody has to get on board with. I haven't heard anyone say, well, we need to just ignore Lansdowne because Lansdowne is just in the Glebe. Like, no, everybody benefits from the Lansdowne. It has football, it has basketball, it has hockey, it has a market. Like, we really want to kind of look at holistically as to where the city is going and where we want those places that are, you know, getting a bit of love, let's say, from the city coffers to be.
And I know that conversation not going anywhere for now, but Councillor Plante, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the sunshine.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. That's Councillor for Rideau Vanier, Stephanie Plante, joining us to chat about a possible levy, how to kind of revitalize the market. And as she mentioned, it seems like, you know, everything's on the table. So I know there will be a lot of feedback on the, you know, possible citywide levy. She's talking more specifically about kind of a ward-specific levy. Interesting in Alta Vista, kind of one used to fund a skating rink there. Interesting. It is. It's good for, you know, if you got buy-in from the community, it is good for, you know, raising funds for these little money or for these little projects, I mean. But the kind of the wider aspect of the Byward market, just kind of interesting. How does it look in the future? We'll get to some text on that coming up as well. Some of the other recommendations in this report I just wanted to mention. So new public spaces, so confirming funding from upper levels of government for William Street and Byward Market Square Street renewal and the creation of a York Street Plaza. 70 Clarence Street, so that's the parking garage here. Byward Market Public Realm Plan proposed turning the aging garage into a public space. I think you might get a little dicey on that. That's a lot of public parking spaces that you'd be getting rid of. I think there's a couple hundred in there. So that's kind of tough when we talk about bringing people into the market. I think you have to replace that with something. But anyway, it sounds like everything is on the table. So not to get too upset about any one thing for... Nothing is confirmed at this point, but your thoughts on this kind of moving forward. 580-580, you can tweet us at CFRE Ottawa. We'll get to some of those texts when we come back here. We'll take a quick break and pay some bills here on News Talk 580 CFRE.
They shot a movie once in my hometown. Everybody was in it. Miles around out at the speedway, some kind of Elvis thing. Well, I ain't no movie star, but I can get behind anything. Yeah, I can get behind anything.
Join the conversation on CFRA Live with Andrew Pinsent. Text 580-580 right now.
Hey, 51, welcome back. This is CFRA Live. I'm Andrew Pinsent with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Okay, wanted to get some texts here on the Byward market because people have a lot of thoughts on this. Very kind of interesting. So looking into the idea of... revitalizing the Byward market, you know, I just want to throw out there that a possible levy is on the table. Everything's on the table right now. I didn't mean to downplay it when I said, you know, it's $10 or $20 on the, but that's what a citywide levy would be. I'm not saying that's not right or wrong. I mean, I understand that is still money and it's still your money. I just want to make it clear I wasn't downplaying that. But just a few texts on this. For a recipe for a successful downtown, clean, safe, fun, and easy to get to for all. Stop with politics. Inaction of meetings, environmental assessments, and studies. That's simple. City of Ottawa should look into why Nashville and other major cities have a successful downtown versus a Detroit model. That's from Chris. I don't know if Nashville is a... I wonder how many people in Nashville. But I don't know if it compares. I think I would compare it more to kind of like an Austin, Texas type thing, just in terms of size. But if you can kind of make it like that, like a little, I don't know, musical hideaway, that would be great. It'd be great for everybody. I would enjoy that as a music enthusiast. Let me see here. As a lifelong resident of Ottawa-Carleton, city of Ottawa, post-2001 amalgamation, I can count on both hands the amount of times I've been downtown. Rural residents should by no means have to pay for the market or anything downtown. De-amalgamation, anyone? CJ and Rito. Man, I was saying that last week. We haven't talked about that in a long time, but like Peel Region, right? Becoming kind of three distinct cities, and we were talking about de-amalgamation. I thought that was crazy. We've never talked about that. It's something that definitely would be. You started talking about that in Ottawa. Oh my gosh, I wonder how much support that would get. Another text here. Absolutely no more taxes. Just another $10 or $20 has caused my municipal taxes to increase well over 100% since Bob Shirelli at amalgamation. That's a very fair point. I want to get some more texts here as well. But Mitch Kudrowski here, also CFR Live producer. Also wanted to ask you just in terms of, I know it's kind of different because we talked about this as well. This one's a little bit harsh, but it says, downtown is a mess because Ottawa basically invites drug addicts to live there. Nothing will improve until that mistake is addressed. Well, I don't think that's exactly what is happening. I think Stephanie Plunk kind of addressed some issues there in terms of the services are centralized, and that just comes with certain kind of aspects of social nature of things like that, right? You are going to have people hanging around a homeless shelter that are homeless, right? Go figure. There are going to be services around there that they're going to need. There's going to be people that are in desperate need of help. The point is to try to get them services and community housing and things like that. But another one kind of, where did the text go? Just talking about how, you know, most crime is targeted. Where did that go? That was a good text. Just talking about how most crime is targeted and how they don't feel unsafe when they go downtown. They think it's kind of overblown in that aspect, like any major city. And Mitch, I was just kind of thinking of a point there. Like, I think I'm speaking from a point of a little bit of privilege because, like, I'm a burly looking white dude walking down the street, right? I'm probably not going to take anything if you say something to me anyway. So, like, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. Nobody's going to mess with me. But that's not the feeling of somebody else downtown, right? If you're a vulnerable person, if you're, you know, a woman alone, for example, walking down the street. I don't know if you feel safe or not. But it is important to make people feel safe, even if it, you know, the perception is that it's not safe, right? It's kind of like the perception versus the reality, right? I don't know how you feel about being in the market. Do you feel unsafe if you ever go, depending on the time of day? Or I know because we kind of see all times here, right? When we're coming to work and things like that. No, I live here.
I think when you work here, I think it's different, right? Because you're here all the time. In broad daylight, everything like that, totally fine. I think the only time that it's a bit dicey and that I'm looking over my shoulder more is if I'm coming to work
early
at
morning shifts.
2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. And then it's kind of scary. On a weekend, you get the party crowd walking around, so there is like enough.
There's still people that haven't gone to sleep.
People milling around, but on a weekday, it's a different story. Yeah, and I've definitely had some really bizarre encounters at 2 or 3 in the morning in the market, walking into work.
Yeah, and then even so as well, I will add that we talk about a lot of the social issues and the stuff that happens, but I will add that there is a little bit of a hooliganism that also happens late at night, right? Like, we've got basically all of Sandy Hill coming down here to chill out, right? And adults as well, but, you know, you've got a lot of mixed crowd, alcohol is involved. There's a lot of just general hooliganism going on, not just, you know, the social aspects of this as well,
right? Yeah, I mean, that's a product of nightlife.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So that's going to happen. But yeah, just, and I wanted to mention too that I've noticed the Byward Market, and I mentioned this to Stephanie Plante as well. The last few weekends, it has been absolutely incredible, the amount of people that have been down here. Mother's Day and then the Tulip Festival, long weekend. It's all been, you know, wall-to-wall people. But what I notice actually the problem is, I think, is more during the week. Like, we just still haven't hit that volume that we had pre-pandemic, and it's noticeable. It's palpable, and particularly in the evenings. I'm sure during the summer the patio season is going to pick up, but it's palpable during the week that there is nobody around and the streets closed down at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock.
Especially
Monday,
in the winter. It's, yeah.
Particularly, yeah. And so, yeah, it's just, how do you do that through the week? How do you draw more people down? And it's, yeah, it just feels like we haven't got back to that natural traffic, even from, you know, the federal government workers. Everybody's, not even just federal government, more people are working from home, right? So it's kind of wild. But let me see here, just a couple more texts before we wrap up the show. It says, Ottawa does not have the will or long-term vision to make downtown a place to be. Worry about mailbox libraries, scooter parking. It's a $14. What is it? Oh, I got cut off there. They're shutting down the 174 construction on a weekend when things are getting back to normal. Stopping the very people they're trying to boost the economy of. Opening up a main artery in downtown after a convoy occupation. Sorry, this is just kind of, it's coming in sections here. But meanwhile, don't discuss a broken billion-dollar bust of an LRT, which is currently local business. Yeah, there's a lot of issues and there's a lot of issues to take care of right now. I guess one of the things I threw out earlier, is this the issue right now that you would like to see taken care of, right? $250,000 on an intersection at Rideau and Sussex, is that money well spent? Is there other issues that this could be thrown towards? I guess we could always have that conversation. But Mitch, I'll give you the last word on this one.
You know, we heard last week that the federal government is looking to offload a bunch of office buildings. Things are clearing up in the downtown core. You know what would fix everything? A bunch of condo buildings that no one can afford.
Yes, yes, you're here.
I hope it doesn't go that way.
Westboro is calling.
No, oh, dear.
We'll leave it there. Get out and enjoy the sunshine today. Thanks so much for listening to us from 6 until 11. Get out and enjoy the Great Glee Garage Sale, Ottawa Race Weekend. Just get out there and enjoy the sunshine. Thanks so much to producer Mitch Kudrowski and Stephen Ellsworth for everything that you've heard today. Until next time, Ottawa, 6 a.m. tomorrow. Stay safe and be well. He was a boy, she was a girl. Can I make it any more obvious? He was a punk, she did ballet.